Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. This is our first annual November Hogwash Show. Called our Hogwash Show, frankly, because the New York Times editorial board on October 25th pointed out that North Carolina dotted with these big, giant pools of hog feces and pig urine. Apparently, they're bright pink. And when Hurricane Matthew roared across North Carolina, they overflowed at least 14 of these waste lagoons, throwing this toxic mix of bacteria, salmonella, E. coli, kills fish, gets into the water table, can make people sick. And that is a new definition in my mind of hogwash. So we thought, okay, if that's hogwash and it's about to be election time, this is our hogwash show. We hope to give you maybe some thoughts about the election. That's our
Is that
plan.
When I'm supposed to go hogwash?
We go hog wild?
No, I think
you're supposed to.
We're not going to give any information
hogwash.
On the election.
Okay, well, let's
hogwash.
Let's go ahead and get this out of the way. All right, first of all, I know nothing about politics. I am not an expert. I just read stuff. Rick knows nothing about politics. And most of the time, we don't even know what we're talking about.
I know that no matter what we do this year, we can't win.
Right. Shelley knows what she's talking about, which is why Shelley doesn't talk very much. By the way, welcome to the program, Shelley.
Thank you.
Thanks to our listeners also at True Talk Internet Radio. That's the idea behind it, though. We are going to talk a little bit about healthcare as it relates to the upcoming elections. And not that anyone is waiting for our dissection of the healthcare policies of the two candidates, but why not kill a little bit of time before the election's talking about it? Before we do that, though, we've got to kill something else. We've got...
Really, Tony? You're going to go there?
Our manager of communications infrastructure from the University of Kentucky to talk to you about our web presence.
I do think he meant we're going to waste some time. We're going to kill some time.
Rick Phillips. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Tony. I'm glad I'm still here.
Disturbing, isn't it?
Just a little. So let's go down this show with, or let's go down this with the audio. WMKY.org. That is Moorhead State Public Radio's website. You can find Health Matters in the menus. You can listen to the other shows if you want, but find your way to Health Matters. There you'll find a listing of the most recent shows. There's a link there to listen to them live. Right then and there, you can just absolutely go back and replay the broadcast anytime, anywhere, whatever device. Again, the link's right there for you. If you decide you want to interact with us, jump over to Facebook, facebook.com/HMRadioShow. There you will find a fan page for Health Matters. No, we did not create that name. That's what Facebook calls them. You can certainly join the page. You can send us some messages. It can be feedback on the show. It can be show topics. You know the drill. You listen every week. You know what we say. It's your chance to ask us questions or to share pertinent health information with the Health Matters community on Facebook. So we'd say if you want to interact with us, go to facebook.com/HMRadioShow.
Our sponsor, the Vaccination League, reminding you don't be late, vaccinate. Vaccination, the easy way to avoid infections due to virus and bacteria without using harsh chemical vitamins and antibiotics. Vaccination like Mother Nature with a 23-gauge needle. And it's past time, actually, to get your fall influenza vaccine. We want to give you one last shot to get your shot before Thanksgiving. So it is, as you go out to vote, why not drop by some healthcare provider, pharmacy, or so forth, and just get a shot in the arm to take away the sting of voting this presidential election. The CDC recommends everyone age 6 months or older receive an influenza vaccine every year by the end of October, if possible. However, seasonal influenza virus activity can continue into May, so you can get vaccinated later. We feel, though, it is really important to have it in your system to boost your immune system before the Thanksgiving holidays, at least a couple of weeks earlier. Vaccine effectiveness highest when we match the flu strain of that season, but even if the match is poor, before, it does seem to show some benefit. For the 2015-16 flu season, that was last winter, it was around 47% effective, and that's actually not bad. This will not prevent you from ever getting the flu. It does not cause flu viruses to bounce off your chest like bullets off Superman or anything like that. But it does modify your response, gets your immune system going earlier to clear that virus. Fun fact number three, only injectable vaccines are recommended. The nasal spray is not available. Sorry about that, but it just didn't seem to be working very well the past couple of seasons. They have trivalent, quadrivalent, meaning active against three strains or four strains of the flu. I will tell you, I got my shot. I didn't even ask. The CDC has no preference, so when she came at me with the flu shot, employee health nurse came around with the flu shot, I said, okay, fine, whatever it is, that's what I want, not that particular. Standard dose vaccines are manufactured using virus grown in eggs. A high-dose vaccine called Fluzone does appear to be more beneficial for people age 65 and older. And I may, when I finally turn 65, which unfortunately is not that far away, I may switch over to the Fluzone high dose because they had 24% fewer influenza infections. Now, when you look at that, it was only 1.4% of them got the flu versus 1.9%. Technically, that's 24% fewer influenza infections, but not that big a change that you would notice. There's something called flu block. I don't know why I called it flu block. That's not anything at all. It's flu block. Flu block, flu block, flu block. That's a tough word to say, Rick. You're laughing at me right now. I know you are, but that's a tough word to say. Proof for people ages 18.
That's funny. I thought it was two words.
It's one word called flu block, and it's egg-free. If you have
serious. Is it hyphenated?
Problems. Yeah. The one that interested me, I got to tell you, is fun fact number eight. Fluad, F-L-U-A-D, the first adjuvanted seasonal influenza vaccine. You have an adjuvant to create a stronger immune response. This has MF59 oil and water emulsion of squalene oil. Canadians over age 65, it was 63% more effective than regular dose without that adjuvant, without the squalene oil. But in a trial of over 7,000 adults, there was no difference in the response. That is so okay. It may be more effective at creating proteins, but it did not seem to make any difference. I am not a big Fluad fan. I will be a late adopter of adjuvanted flu vaccine. New this season, flu cell vax, growing viruses in animal cells instead of eggs. Again, a lot of options if you are concerned about egg allergies. But the CDC has said if you have allergies causing hives, you can receive any of these license recommended. You just need to hang around the doctor's office for 30 minutes. If you've had previous hives, they looked at 4,000 people with egg allergies that led to hives and found that there were no occurrences of severe reactions. So just because you're allergic to eggs and it leads to hives, it does not appear to affect your response to the vaccine. Finally, some children younger than age 9 will require two doses, particularly if it is their first flu shot. So talk with your healthcare provider about that. That is our sponsor, Vaccination League. Last chance, really. We'll give it to the end of the year, but my goodness, why would you take a chance over Halloween with influenza? Rick, I got a big, you know how I like to put a really power-packed first article to get everybody's attention.
Okay.
This
I'm excited.
From the October 24th Time magazine, a teen wakes up from a coma speaking fluent Spanish. Now, there's a headline that makes you think. Here's the story.
Before they went into coma, did they speak Spanish?
They did not.
Be careful with you, because sometimes you know.
I know, they did not. But here's the thing. His name is Ruben Insimo. He's 16. He is from Nigeria. He was diving for a soccer ball, another teenager kicked him on the right side of his head during a game. He wanted to play professional soccer, and hopefully he has reconsidered that. Suffered a severe concussion, went into shock, had to be airlifted to the hospital. Days after being treated in the intensive care unit, he finally started stirring again. He moved his hand. The first word he said was, "I am hungry," in Spanish. And you will be pleased to know I'm not going to even try to say "I am hungry" in Spanish. I am not a Spanish fluent person. His father, a high school teacher, says, "I was shocked. He's never spoken Spanish before." Maybe we should put this on Halloween, because that is a bizarre thing, you know, if your son suddenly speaks a language he hadn't spoken before. He ran out of the room and brought back a nurse. The nurse said, well, we need an interpreter. What language is he speaking? What? And his father said, well, he speaks English. We are not Spanish-based people. Those are the words he used. You know, and I myself am not a Spanish-based person. They sought consultation with a neurologist. He could recite a few phrases in Spanish before the accident, but his brother had studied in Spain. He had Spanish-speaking teammates, so he had heard some. And then when he awoke, he was fluent. He recovered his ability to speak English, and the Spanish has now started to fade as of October 24th, according to Time.
You know what they say, if you don't use it, you lose it, right?
Well, and especially, you know, how would that be, though? You see this Spanish ability fading out. You say, I need to speak more Spanish because, you know, and this is a Gilligan's Island kind of thing where you get hit in the head and suddenly you have a new ability. There was an episode of Gilligan's Island where he did just that.
I thought he ate radioactive carrots.
There were many episodes of Gilligan's Island. But I promise you, he got hit in the head with a coconut, and I forgot what ability he gained, but he did gain that ability. And here it is. Now, you know, there's something called foreign accent syndrome, and it's been associated with some strokes and some brain damage where people start speaking, for instance, with a British or a French accent, but they say the same words.
Can,
they don't
can
pick
you
up
make
a language.
People speak intelligently? Is that possible?
You ask on the Election Day show. You're asking, the next question, could we kick a few people in the head and just try it out and see what happens?
Right. I mean, you know.
We are not advocating violence toward political candidates on Health Matters. We
no,
would never do
no,
such a
no.
thing. Absolutely
and
not.
And, you know, this will be the last show where we don't know the outcome.
No, the outcome is things are going to go bad. But I thought, you know, the idea that, and admittedly, he knows or he knew enough Spanish that he did not learn something while he was in a coma. You wonder, what if the TV set was turned on to, you know, Spanish-speaking TV stations? But I don't think you would do that.
Well, but how would you correlate that? How could you just listen to the words without seeing or correlating them to some event or something? How are you going to figure out that a word means egg?
Yeah. Well, he had heard Spanish before, but the fascinating thing is when he woke up from his coma, he did not speak English and Spanish. He spoke Spanish. He simply, the part of his brain that would reach for words in English was gone, and so apparently he just went searching and found some of the Spanish words he had heard from his Spanish teammates. My suspicion is he couldn't recite Shakespeare in Spanish, but he could probably say some simple phrases in fluent Spanish because
so
somewhere
he
that was in a different part of his brain.
He repeated a phrase he heard, not necessarily conjured a new sentence.
You know, I think that's so. Obviously, this is Time Magazine. I haven't seen the case report on this, but it is fascinating. I've got to say the idea that, and I think that it starts by blocking apparently the part of your brain that reaches out for words when you need to speak. That gets blocked, and so you don't know what it is. So at any rate, I just thought it was an interesting story. I thought something that we would start off with because, frankly, from here on out, things are going to get really dull. Well, we're talking healthcare policy, and the second thing is, as I have said before, we don't know what we're talking about.
So you mean you'll be talking healthcare policy?
No, I'm going to ask you some questions. I can certainly.
I'm just
going to
make fun of you.
And how is that different from last week's show?
But you insist on continuing to ask questions. Yeah, I can't make you go away.
When I first put the show together, I really thought about just saying, look, who cares about the policy? But then I thought, you know, it's good to kind of think through the policies because I think it's important that we have some kind of an idea of where we want to go with our health care.
Think is not a word we put with this election.
I'll tell you where we want to go. We want to take a break and come back with our second fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio. Stay tuned.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is our November hogwash show. Our salute to Hurricane Matthew that washed the hog feces out of the lagoons in eastern North Carolina, and also to a different kind of hogwash that we've been subjected to from our two political parties and independents and others. With us second time around from the University of Kentucky Physician Assistant Program, Assistant Professor Shelley Irving. Hi, Shelley.
Hello.
Our sponsor for the second time, the Vaccination League, reminding you don't be late. Vaccinate. Avoid the harsh chemical vitamins and antibiotics and concentrate on the all-natural way to protect yourself against those nasty viral and bacterial infections. That's right, vaccination, like Mother Nature with a 23-gauge needle. Reminding you it is time. It is past time. It is getting late in the season to get your fall influenza vaccine. If you've not had it, make plans to do it. Why not? In fact, after you vote for the candidates, just go ahead and ruin the rest of the day with a shot in the arm. CDC says everyone aged 6 months or older receive an influenza vaccine every year by the end of October, if possible. We are focusing now on trying to keep you safe for Thanksgiving. The nasal spray is out. Only injectable vaccines. If there's a close match and it was 47% effective last season, not too bad, not too shabby, but it can be up to 50 to 60% if they match exactly the type of flu virus that is circulating. There are trivalent, there are quadrivalent, there are those grown in eggs, there are those that are grown not in eggs, in animal cells. We have no preference for the majority of people. In fact, I just rolled up my sleeve and I said, if you have a vaccine, hit me. I don't care if it's trivalent or quadrivalent. The CDC also has no preference. Over age 65, flu zone high dose. It is a sort of a double, triple strength vaccination that induces a stronger immune response and seems to provide a little bit more protection, although not all that much, to be honest. Fluad has an adjuvant. We just are a little suspicious that oil and water, squalene oil emulsion is the way to go with a vaccine. We're going to let some other people try it out before we get excited about that. And then again, for people with egg allergies, even if it caused hives, get the vaccine in a doctor's office, wait about a half an hour. You should be good. 4,000 people with egg allergies got influenza vaccine in a study, and there were none occurrences of a severe reaction to the vaccine. And remember, some of the young kids first time around will need two vaccinations rather than a single one. That's our sponsor, the Vaccination League. Don't be late. Vaccinate. It is time now to talk politics, Rick and Shelley. I'm very sorry.
Do we really have to?
Yeah, well, this... this is kind of, first of all, we have to recognize, and please, I'm sorry for my Democratic friends that are out there. I will just tell you, I don't particularly have a political alliance. I look at these things, and so I will tell you some things that sound Republican, things that sound Democrat. If you can figure out which one I am, then you actually know more about me than I know about myself.
Can we just make them sound intelligent?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. This is Wall Street Journal, October 6th. Wall Street Journal tends to lean more toward Republicans, but these are facts. And this is talking about... The title was not factual. It said Obamacare's meltdown has arrived. And they described the situation in Tennessee. Blue Cross Blue Shield of Tennessee leaving Nashville, Memphis, and Knoxville with $500 million in losses in 3 years. The Community Health Alliance was a co-op. And like about half the co-ops that were started to try to provide a co-op level insurance, they're bankrupt and they are no longer issue policies. United Healthcare leaving the state of Tennessee. 60% of the Obamacare consumers will lose coverage in 2017 in the state of Tennessee. 73 of 95 counties in Tennessee will have only one insurer. The premium increases looks like a weighted average of 56% increase in premiums, 62% for Blue Cross Blue Shield, 46% for Cigna, 44% for Humana. And deductibles now up to $6,800 for some family plans. This is disastrously bad for the state of Tennessee. Alabama has only one insurer for the entire state. Mississippi premiums going up 16%. Kentucky's 25%. Georgia's 33%. And nationally, one-third of American counties will have only one insurance option. And obviously, with only one insurance option, the insurance companies can pretty well call the shots. This is bad. I mean, this is the Affordable Care Act right now needs some major overhaul to try to get the insurance companies back into play. I read one person said this made sense to me. It was a Yale forum actually on the insurance. They said we've never had legislation this massive that has not had any corrections as it's gone. With the way Congress has gone, this was introduced and we never really did any fine tuning on this because we could not come to any agreement between the two parties. And so this has gone on longer without any minor corrective action to the point that we start to see some things like this. We will have a major corrective action in 2017, perhaps a one-time corrective action, trying to get the premium rates up to the point we can bring the insurance companies back to the table. They were losing a huge amount of money on this. And you will hear that they were profitable, and they are from non-insurance business, but I don't think anyone is arguing that they are making a lot of money from issuing insurance on the exchange. The exchange is where people that can't get insurance elsewhere could get it. So this is an important part of the American healthcare system.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Whenever you talk policy, I always fall asleep.
And this has been building. Aetna dropped its exchange presence from 15 states to 4. They essentially got out but just kept their toe in so they could come back if things worked. They lost more than $300 million in 2016 in the exchange. Humana dropped down to 11 states, down from 19. They lost $3.4 billion. They expect a reduction of 80% from the $3.4 billion in premiums they got. Humana did record lose $176 million in 2016, $208 million in the third quarter alone in 2016. UnitedHealth lost $1 billion over 2 years, and they more or less got out of the market. And so when you look at it, you know, and again, we talked about half nationally, half of these local co-ops that were trying to compete with the insurance companies went bankrupt. You may remember that when the exchanges started in 2013, they couldn't start them up. This has been difficult. And the year 2017, and the exchanges opened in November, November 1st, the sign-up period is going to be very, very difficult for these things. So you ask yourself, and this is what we're trying to do here in this fractional portion, is what are the political candidates going to do about this situation?
I don't know. I watched I think there were three debates. I watched most of all of them, and I'm still completely confused. I think really what we're going to do is we're going to yell at each other, call people names. I don't know. Maybe that'll help in healthcare.
That has always worked in the past.
I think that's going to be the strategy. I mean, that was their policy? I believe was
Who
to yell
we
at each
blame
other.
Blame for this mess. I know.
Well, I mean, it's never me. It's always you. Right? I mean, Tony, it's always you.
Well, and interestingly enough, you could make a
case. Now, if you're
going
to play this game, you got to blame it on me. Otherwise, this game's not going to work.
How about this? Quick switch. Shelley's fault.
I agree. Shelley's fault.
I thought Congress did it.
No.
No, no, it's
no,
Shelley's
you're in the
fault.
Middle. You're the one that did it. So here is, again, the
I mean, look, can we at least, like, go over what their positions are?
Yeah.
Aren't you planning on doing that?
That, in fact, is the key part of this. Let me give you a couple more background pieces. The Health and Human Services declared the healthcare gov is open. Premiums will rise average of 25%. Number of people eligible for tax credits will increase, so good for them. They said 70% of healthcare.gov users will pay $75 a month in premiums thanks to federal subsidies. And again, if you are of the nature that we shouldn't be paying more taxes, in fact, the reason you can pay $75 a month for a $1,000-plus policy is going up 25% is you're getting tax subsidies. Now, there are really three big buckets here. One, the Affordable Care Act expanded Medicaid. That is where the majority of the drop in uninsured came from, is the expansion of Medicaid. There is also, obviously, we have people on the people who are getting insurance through their employer, and they're not doing so well either. According to the Commonwealth Fund, families that receive insurance through their employer spent on the average 6.5% of their income on premiums and deductibles in 2006, 10.1% in 2015. So if you are getting employer insurance, the Affordable Care Act has, you know, I mean, maybe it would have gone up more without the Affordable Care Act, but it certainly hasn't become more affordable. In fact, your costs have gone up. That's the second group. That is the vast majority of Americans. And I guess, you know, if you're an employer right now, we thought at one time, we thought employers would just get out of the insurance business altogether.
Well, but I think that's not possible. I think maybe we were a little naive, but I mean, benefits are a competitive part of employment, right? And if you want the best and brightest, you got to kind of provide a benefit, and the benefit's healthcare, right? And so I just don't think that's in the long run went the way we thought it would.
Right. So what you got then, you got the vast majority of Americans still get insurance through their employer. They're paying more, again, went up from 6% to 10%. There are 15 million people added through Medicaid expansion in the states that did it. There are about 11 million people on the private exchanges. That was supposed to be young people who were working and may not have been able to get insurance, and also people who had chronic illnesses. Well, the young people decided to pass, so we wound up with people with chronic illnesses dominating the exchanges, and it turned out that the rates that they were spending money were much in excess of what we thought. And there, in a nutshell, is our problem. Employer insurance going up some, young people not signing up, chronically ill people using a lot of resources on the exchange, and Medicaid using a lot of resources in expansion. So a lot of money going into our healthcare system, a lot more than we had before. All right, so you ask then where the candidates stand, and I'm going to try to...
Well, never mind.
No, go ahead.
One was on the left, one was on the right. That's sure. where they stood.
Sure.
I watched it.
Now, first of all, let us reiterate what we said at the outset of the program. I do not know what I'm talking about here. I just read stuff. Rick does not know what he's talking about. Shelley does not talk enough. And so, in that sense, the amount of actual intelligent information flowing out of this show is minimal. That's how we create
so
the information.
We're basically going to tell you what we think, not what we...
Yeah. So this is the intelligence bottleneck where nobody's really saying anything very smart. But it occurred to me that if you were to fast-forward things, it's like Back to the Future. There are two different things ways our country might go. Let's say the Republicans win in a landslide. Let's say that Republicans dominate the healthcare and the political scene for the next 20 years. And let's say that they actually are good people and that they actually care about providing healthcare for people. The way an ideal Republican system would be, they would have high deductible insurance. It's pretty clear that if you put high deductible insurance in place, people are much more reluctant to use resources when they're spending their own money. So everyone, I think, has agreed. After we tried HMOs, after we tried letting the insurance companies just be sheriff and try to arrest people who use too much health care, it turns out high deductibles are probably the best way to control costs. So in the Republican scheme, they would also have a health savings account that they could use to get minor health things, a high deductible plan for emergencies, and in my Republican plan, they would have strong Medicare and Medicaid for those who can't. We don't want them to slip through the cracks. That's not necessarily a big Republican tenet, but that's my Republican. If the Democrats were to win and to hold sway for 20 years, I think we would have national health insurance. And in some way or another, we're going to have to strengthen the federal ability to manage prices, I think. So you go from a private insurance with high deductible and the price controls are built in to a national health insurance. And you don't have price controls, so the government's going to have to be much more active, and that would suit, I think, Democratic ideals. All right, Donald Trump released a health care manifesto, 7 pillars. First one, repeal Obamacare. So, you know, I mean, if you're going to go to these high deductible insurance plans, you need to get rid of Obamacare to get the federal government out of this.
You know, I tell you, can we at least rename it?
Well, it was originally that was kind of derogatory, and then Obama, I think, sort of likes it. I mean, after all, you get something named after you.
Sure.
So repeal the Affordable Care Act if you feel we want to be more neutral. Allow purchase of insurance across state lines. That was a big thing. That insurance portability has been a big Republican platform for a couple of election cycles.
Do you think
now.
That'll work?
No, I don't think so. The problem with it is, you know, what it means is that if Kentucky has fewer regulations on insurance, people from other states could come buy their insurance in Kentucky. We could become, in essence, sort of like gambling or casinos or things like that. People would cross the lines to buy insurance here.
But don't you think that, and see, this is where, you know, not that this is a, there's a, not that I'm going to propose a solution, so I'm going to be part of the problem. And that is, you know, states like Kentucky that are in the bottom of every list or the top of the bad lists, you know, they're hard to insure, they're expensive to insure. Do we really think that the people are going to want to just run in here and start insuring some of the most uninsurable people in the U.S.? And so to me, I think, yeah, lowering the borders is going to help Chicago. It's going to help, you know, it's going to help some of the, you know, especially out west where everybody's real, you know, you got a lot more health conscious environments, a lot more outdoor, a lot more working out, you know, just in a sense, just a different way of approaching things. The insurance is going to help out there. But I just can't imagine that people are going to come rushing to help Kentucky with their insurance problem.
Well, on the other hand,
and the funny thing is Kentucky traditionally votes Republican in the federal elections.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's kind of interesting in this scenario. I'm pretty sure that if Kentucky goes the way it typically does, they're not going to get any help on their insurance side.
I mean, not. I mean, it was odd because Trump did say as long as it meets the requirements of the other state, which then at that point there'd be, you know, you could, I guess what he was saying is if you move from one state to another, you can keep your insurance, which is, okay, that's an interesting idea.
Well, but
different states at this point have different requirements for their insurance, it wouldn't.
But then you'd have to have every hospital take that insurance
right
everywhere, and that may not be negotiated. To me, that's maybe a long-term goal, but I can't see that in the short term. I just can't see a quick way to get to that.
I think most people would say the world would have to change a little bit before that makes a difference. Number three, allow people to deduct their insurance costs from their taxes. I, you know,
You can already, but it's just it's an incredibly high amount you have to spend to get any break at all. And so, I mean, I've never once gotten the benefit of any tax break on any health care.
Fair enough. Four, expand health savings accounts. And again, to make people more personally responsible, these would be tax-deductible accounts that you could use to pay for routine health care or doctor visits, things like that. Okay. Require price transparency for medical goods and services. You know, this has been I'll explain one more time about price transparency. The hospitals, the price that they name is something that they send to the insurance companies. They say, look, we charge this much. The insurance companies send back. They say, all right, we're going to take 50% off that. We're going to have a 50% discount. We're going to sell it to other insurance companies. And if you do business with us, you got to put up with that. So if you name your price, immediately your price goes in half. So price transparency is going to have to first thing is, like you said, with portability, we're going to have to change the way doctors and hospitals and insurance companies do business before we get transparency.
Right.
Because transparency is fine, but you can't have then mandatory discounts and price transparency. Because I would love to charge lower, but if I do, whatever I charge, 60, 50% off for people who have insurance. Block grant Medicaid to the states. I am not capable of understanding that, but that's pillar number six. Pillar number seven, interesting. I will leave you this, and then we're going to come back with Hillary in the next fractional portion. Remove barriers for drug providers that provide reliable and cheaper products from other countries. Congress needs to step away from special interests, do what's right for America. We need to have access to imported, safe, and dependable drugs from other countries.
Whoa.
That's number seven. Well, keep that in mind, because we're going to talk about Hillary Clinton's plan, again, according to the Kaiser Foundation, the key points of her plan, which has many more points, I might point out, than Donald Trump's does. If a number of points makes a difference, you should definitely vote Clinton, because she has many more points. We need to take a break and catch our breath before we dive into Hillary Clinton's health care proposals. You should, too, and come back and listen to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is a tough one. This is our November Hogwash Show. We are talking about the things you need to know, or maybe you don't need to know, before you decide, as if you haven't already decided who you're going to vote for.
Do you think this is the least amount of undecideds in history? It seems very polarized.
You think? I think so. With us also from the University of Kentucky Physician Assistant Studies Program, Shelley Irving, to try to keep Rick and me calm. Welcome back, Shelley.
Thank you.
She's going to have to talk to do that.
Right. And before we start this, let me just say to everyone in our audience, you should vote. You may, in fact, not like the personalities you see, and you may feel that there's not one of them worth voting for. If you don't vote for a personality, you should vote for a plan. You may wish to keep the Republicans stronger so that they can block the Democrats from initiating certain plans. You may wish to give the Democrats the free hand to initiate these plans and rescue the Affordable Care Act. You have to make those decisions. The other thing is you need to vote so that you can talk to your congressman, to your representative, to your congressperson about issues that affect you, because if you don't vote and you don't donate, they don't need to listen to you. And then finally, you need to vote to represent your block. If you are a young person and you don't vote, we know we can take advantage of young people. Senior citizens have learned this. They vote every election, and you know that you can't do anything without the senior citizens' approval. So you need to vote for your demographic. You need to vote for your own ability to interact with your congressperson. You need to vote. It's an important part of democracy. And the harder the decision is, the more, in fact, you need to vote. If it were easy, then it wouldn't matter. But it is not easy to figure out how to vote this election. But please do so. It's important for you and for the country.
Wow, okay. Tony. That was impressive.
Sponsor the Vaccination League. Don't be late. Get your flu shot. My goodness. Do I have to keep reading this stuff to you? Just go get your flu shot.
Hey, Tony.
What?
You wrote that.
Well, I know, but at some point, it just all the
did
details.
Did you write this?
There's a dozen different kinds of flu shots. They all protect against the flu. You should get one of them.
And if quadrivalent, trivalent, just pick a valent and just go.
Just get a flu shot. Let's face it. Life is not always easy. Get a flu shot. We'll go
take the 23-gauge needle and stick it.
That.
I don't see that in the sponsor. I'm afraid we're going to run off the sponsor there with that. But okay. All right, a little bit of levity, but let's get back to it now. We had seven pillars of Trump care.
And you ended on Trump a boomer.
Healthcare manifesto, repeal Obamacare, allow purchase of insurance across state lines, allow people to deduct insurance from taxes, expand personal health savings accounts, require price transparency for medical goods and services, block grant for Medicaid to the states. That is, let's stop putting so many restrictions and conditions on our Medicaid dollars to the states. Just give them the money. Let the states, they know what to do. And then seven, interesting enough, allow consumers access to imported, safe, and dependable drugs from overseas, bringing more options to consumers. Hillary Clinton's health care plan, again, the number one was the complete and total repeal of Obamacare for Trump's plan. Hillary Clinton's health care plan, maintain and build upon the Affordable Care Act. Increase the premium tax credit so individuals pay no more than 8.5% of their income on health insurance. That will require, obviously, additional government spending. Add a public option plan. And remember, we talked about the Democratic endgame of having a national, one national health insurance. If you add a public option plan supported by the federal government, you're on your way. That's another step in building a national health insurance. Allow the Secretary of Health and Human Services authority to block unreasonable rate increases. That's nice, but again, where we are right now with the Affordable Care Act, with insurance companies losing money hand over fist, there will be a, if you want to call it that, an unreasonable rate increase.
Well, Tony, how do you describe unreasonable?
Yeah.
I mean, how do you put a number on unreasonable?
Well, I think if it ever gets to the point where the majority of insurance companies are making money again off of insurance. Now, again, do not feel sorry for them. They are making quite a bit of money, but not off selling insurance
marketplace. I saw something floating around that it was like took like the top eight insurance CEOs. I think the lowest any of them are making is like $8 million a year.
Yeah, they're doing fine. They're evil. There's no doubt about that. But in the Affordable Care Act marketplaces, they took a bath, because the federal government could not bring the young, healthy people in to balance out the older, sicker people. I mean, that's I have no love of insurance companies or insurance company executives, but that is a financial fact and not really arguable. And so when you talk about blocking unreasonable increases, the other thing that Hillary Clinton said, the plan should provide 3 sick visits per year that don't count toward the deductibles. They should place a monthly limit of $250 on out-of-pocket prescription costs. All those things, in fact, are going to add to the cost of the plans, because right now they're going broke without those additional conditions. You add additional conditions, you're going to add to the cost of the plans, which, again, will be subsidized. And keep in mind, the vast majority of us are not on the marketplace. We're either Medicaid or we are employer-sponsored insurance. There's 11 million people on that marketplace, and they will get the 3 sick visits. They will get the monthly limits and so forth. That's her plan. $500 million to facilitate enrollment, 100% Medicaid match. She's going to renew the 100% Medicaid match offer to the states, trying to get more states to expand Medicaid and maintain the current federal Medicaid financing, no block grant stuff. Allow people over 55 to buy into Medicare. So, again, there's no sinister nature about this. The idea is to, again, to put together a more comprehensive national health care plan rather than leave this to insurance companies. If you like that, then you're good. If you don't like that, then you probably shouldn't vote for Hillary Clinton. Allow families, regardless of immigration status, to buy insurance through the marketplaces. That's one that bleeds over into how you feel about people who may not be legally present in the United States. Allow Medicare to negotiate drug prices, which we at Health Matters absolutely favor. If you cannot negotiate drug prices, then the pharmaceutical companies, even more evil than the insurance companies over the past couple of years, will simply keep raising prices as much as they can. Increase funding for substance abuse prevention. Allow importation of prescription drugs. Now, there's one. Look at that. Hillary Clinton says she will allow importation of prescription drugs for personal use. Donald Trump says we will allow consumers access to imported, safe, and dependable drugs from overseas.
Whoa.
How about that? And I think the thing is, the pharmaceutical industry has made these guys so mad that, in fact, nobody likes them, whether it's Hillary Clinton taking their money, whether it's Donald Trump blustering impossible plans and improbable plans. Either way you look at it, nobody right now likes the situation with the pharmaceutical companies. And so you use that as a threat. If you have that in your policy, at some point, either the pharmaceutical companies start to have some sensibility about the pain, the havoc, and frankly, the sickness that they're causing by overpricing their drugs. If you can't get access to these drugs, people get sick, people die. Mm-hmm. And there is no place for that level of greed in the healthcare system. And so both the candidates have in their healthcare plans the access to cheaper drugs from overseas.
Who would have thought that the one area where we can find some common ground was in healthcare?
And Chu also wants to revise the patent and exclusivity period for new drugs. Once again, these things have been abused to the point of wrecking the healthcare system. They are piling cost upon cost into our healthcare system. So Hillary says, okay, you know, the federal government is going to take over and we are going to allow you to get drugs from elsewhere. We're going to reduce that patent exclusivity. She has a lot of other things about if there was federal assistance in developing the drug, they should recognize that and pay it back. And frankly, it was a little bit too complex for me to put on this show because I didn't understand it myself. But the point is, again, the federal government becomes much more active in trying to force these prices down using a variety of tools. Now, those are planks. I think one of the questions you've got to ask yourself is, as damaged as these candidates are by divisiveness in debates, could either one of them, being elected, be able to implement any of their policies? You know, because President Obama actually was not able to fine-tune the Affordable Care Act since it was passed. They expended so much political capital getting it passed that there have been very minimal changes, and that's one of the reasons why it is doing so poorly right now.
Does add an interesting element to the election, and that is it's really, while everything is focused on the presidential candidates, you know, how Congress fares and how the, you know, Senate and House basically fare in all this, along with the presidential, you know, whatever happens in the presidential race will prove to be the interesting part of it, right?
Yeah. I'm no political scholar, but those downstream elections are going to be absolutely life and death to these parties.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And but it's also going to kind of give some insight to the American persona. You know,
right.
What do Americans feel like right now? Do we feel more Democrat? Do we feel more Republican? You know, where are we as a society? That'll be the interesting thing. And it'll even be more if you start breaking it down into rural urban.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the question will be, do we trust either candidate enough to allow them downstream elections? Yeah, you could say, all right, I don't care who gets elected. I'm voting for downstream. I'm voting for the other people to keep them in check. Mm-hmm. That would be one strategy.
Right, say. Right. Is this going to be a straight ticket election, right? Are people just going to walk in and straight ticket the election?
I don't know. We act like we know what we're talking about.
No, we don't know.
We absolutely assure our radio fans we have no idea what we're talking
about. But it's intriguing to think about.
Yeah.
There are so many permutations, there's so much variability, and there's so much insight that we just don't have.
This is absolutely true. In an overall sense, interested in the direction our country takes. And I will tell you, just looking at this, either one of these things could work. Either one of these things could fail. If you are going for a government, a single-payer government program, and I know my good friend Yule Scott has been after this for years, price control, you've got to do a better job than the Affordable Care Act at price control. The one thing that seems to work for price control is an outrageous deductible. The consumers have to have some skin in the game. For a long time, theoretically, we thought it didn't matter. As a practical matter, I really don't think that many people believe that anymore. It's clear that high deductible plans, in my mind, it's clear high deductible plans do have an effect, a breaking effect on costs. On the other hand, we know that the pharmaceutical industry has gotten around the deductibles by offering all sorts of patient assistance programs to make sure you don't have to personally pay for your drugs, but collectively we all have to pay for them after they help you with your deductible. The rest of it comes from your insurance, and they can run your insurance costs up with their medicines. So again, the Democrats will have to get that. The Republicans will have to dismantle this, and boy, will there be upheaval. There will be chaos, I think, if we come off the Affordable Care Act, roll back Medicaid expansion. I don't want to be a part of that healthcare system. It just scares me. But I think if we were able to negotiate that in an intelligent way, we could. The Republican strategy is not crazy, and I know some of my friends may feel uncomfortable with that.
But it looks to me like, in terms of controlling costs and getting us where we need to be, we have to cause some pain in order to get the country off this healthcare binge we've been on. And again, it's everything from we talked last week about bladder control medicines to dialyzing people who have terminal conditions to doing things that to getting unnecessary x-rays. We spend too much money, and we will outspend any current healthcare system, in my opinion. Well, let's just make this whole rosy show. Let's wrap this up. With this was reported in the AMA Internal Medicine Journal, October 24th, state-level cancer mortality attributable to cigarette smoking in the U.S. And you might imagine this is not good news for the state of Kentucky or really any southern state. They said, all right, we know that smoking increases your risk of myeloid leukemia, cancers of the oral cavity, the pharynx, the esophagus, the stomach, the colon and rectum, liver, pancreas, larynx, trachea, lung, bronchus, cervix, kidneys, urinary bladder, all those things are increased. They said, so if you figured out how much increase there was due to smoking, how many cancers overall does smoking cause? And so here's the overall results. 167,000 cancer deaths in the United States in 2014, 28.6% of all cancer deaths attributable to cigarette smoking. Among men, the deaths attributable to smoking range from a low of 21% in Utah to almost 40% in Arkansas. We, among men, Kentucky was fifth. Among women, we are number one in the nation. 11% of all cancer in Utah was caused by smoking, 29% in Kentucky. Utah, California, Hawaii, here's the bottom five, basically. New York, Hawaii, Colorado, California, and Utah dead last among men and women overall. Nine of the top 10 smoking cancer states for men, six of the top 10 were in the South. 40% of cancer deaths in Arkansas, Louisiana, and Tennessee, West Virginia, and Kentucky are caused by smoking. 26% of all cancer deaths in those states in women. In Kentucky, according, I'm pulling out the table now. In Kentucky, 3,452 deaths every year caused by smoking.
Sad.
Yep. Yeah. You know, as you go to the polls, as you vote, I want you to realize we could vote this very thing away. If the Kentucky legislature would pass a comprehensive indoor smoking ban and increase our cigarette tax to the national average, of those 3,400 deaths, we could probably cut that number in half. That would be more Kentuckians that die of drug overdoses, more Kentuckians that die of car crashes, more Kentuckians that die of diabetes. This would really be something if we could cut those deaths to 3,400. And this is just cancer. We're not even talking about heart disease, lung disease, and other problems from cigarettes. Why, in this election year, do we continue to put up with this, with a legislature that simply will not do that? This is not, in fact, a matter of we don't have the money for it. This is something that, frankly, we don't have the courage to do, to simply confront this. And the fact that we don't annoys me. The truth of the matter is, when you see 3,452 Kentuckians dying of smoking-related conditions, you wonder, why don't the feds intervene? There were a lot fewer deaths than that from narcotics, and they went and shut down the pill mills in California, in Florida, I mean. So why doesn't someone help us with this? Why are we on our own on this? Why, in fact, do we continue to do this?
Perplexes the mind.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
So as you vote, keep that in mind. As a voter, you could change this as well. You could elect representatives who are not afraid to change the death toll here in Kentucky that's due to cigarettes. And election season is a good time to remind yourself we still theoretically control the legislatures in our state by our votes, and we ought to be able to get them to do the things that would protect Kentucky lives. That the fundamental job of government is to protect the people. And in Kentucky, we have failed to do that. Rick, we have failed to accomplish anything with this show. I think it's time to end it.
Special thanks to our Morehead State Public Radio producer, Brian Courtney, and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org. Or visit us on Facebook, do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember,
according to an October 25th New York Times editorial, serious problems can arise from health matters, where industrial farms across the state dispose of billions of gallons of pig feces every year.
Environmental advocates have been flying over our show to identify overflowing areas where health information has become mixed with waste, a public health hazard that could last for weeks as Health Matters flows into rivers and streams, potentially sickening all those who come into contact with our show.
Even under normal conditions, our show can produce dangerous gases, noxious smells, and dust containing hog waste. People listening to our show are at an increased risk of asthma, diarrhea, eye irritation, depression, and other health problems.
Now, North Carolina passed a moratorium on new Health Matters shows in 1997, but there are still hundreds of Health Matters radio shows in active use.
Unless Morehead State Public Radio requires companies to change their waste disposal methods that happened with Health Matters, what happened with Health Matters will happen again.
Whatever you do, do not take this stuff lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and vote. Then, tune in next week, if we survive the elections, for more Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.